Next, the International
Connection
in color.
Good morning and welcome to the International Connection. Impressing all the people here from Twilight Spirits that are in. And we have, I'm Greg Duffel, by the way, the host of the International Connection. Heard here every week at 8:30 a.m. on Sunday mornings on CKLN FM. And this week we have we've got a show. I'm not going to say anything about it. I'm not going to put any adjectives in front of it. We've got a show. That show is going to be from June 26th, 1990. Now, were any of you born June 26th, 1990?
No.
No. This is a show from before you were born. Just barely?
Barely.
91. So a year later, leave the room, Daniel. Leave the room. You're hogging the stage. So, yes, Mike Dyer, Bob Dobbs, and special appearances by Jerry Boulanger of Unfortunate Sonic Casualties, still here at CKLN, Nelson Thal, the host of Cloak and Dagger, and I guess it's still going, I don't know, and the man that we knew here as Wizard Stew, who would phones in under another name. It's all coming up right now. And stay tuned at 10 minutes past 10 for something very special and very unusual. I hope.
I show this in the context mythically. I take volumes to elucidate. But certainly, if you borrow the most general down to the specific and get to the utmost hidden ground, the final hidden ground is the long fuse. The long fuse, Bob, that's the final metaphor for this end time. So I just thought I'd pass that on. I've enjoyed your views many times. I tried to reach your show last night. It's Thursday, June 13th. And, of course, I was unable to get through. The circuits were busy. And I just wanted to pass that on. I don't think there's anything else. I understand you're, from my top contacts and intelligence reports, you're continuing your honing your perceptual fireproof apparatus, attempting to update consciousness, making sensory threshold analysis at the speed of thought and light. So, Bob, greetings to you, and goodbye and good luck for now.
Yeah, I've been thinking about the future of the Federation, and there's a Jose Arguelles' notion that in 2012, on the winter solstice, December 21st, 2012, that's when we'll self-elect ourselves into the Galactic Federation, and we'll come into conscious unity with the armies of the invisible who've been working for us through these difficult times. And then I remembered Robert Anton Wilson's article in Magical Blend a couple months ago. He's talking about the amount of information doubling it's now doubling about every 18 months, and that he says that by late in the year 2012, we should have information doubling about every second. So what's that all about? And what's it all about that C. Frank Zappa's moving into, he wants to be the president of the Federation, right? If that's the case, then it looks like Captain Beefheart's in for quite a shock, because he thinks his destiny is painting shadows in the desert, but he's going to be the Secretary of State for the galaxy. See, this is going to be the dawn of galactic history, and we're more than ready, aren't we?
Hi, Bob. This is Sean. I have another reason why I think cosmic awareness has lost to the Axis. because cosmic awareness sends out its propaganda via the print medium, which is a visual medium, so they're not using their intuitive factions as home by the acoustic space, whereas the Axis, they communicate through the audio medium of cassettes and stuff. So they're more intuitive, although I think the Evergreens are even lacking in that degree, because if they really had it on the ball, they'd do live broadcasts. They'd start their own radio show in, through their home base down in Vancouver, and have Axis evenings on the radio, make it live. The Evergreens haven't learned, or rather, the home base of the Axis haven't learned how to jam yet, I don't think. But sometimes you take care of that by doing some broadcasts for them. So if you're doing them the service of broadcasting for them, then okay, maybe they have recognized that need, but I think it'd still be better to do it live, do it jamming. Okay, thanks, bye.
Ow, I just stubbed my big toe. That's right, my big toe, T-O. You're in the background. Bob, Jerry, I just came back from a psychic TV show. You gotta tell me how you're gonna pull all these 23 Gnostic dolt heads out of their little fixation for Satan. Let me know.
Now that we're seated in the interval between the summer solstice and the 22nd, it would seem to be time to hoik up the holy office of Finnegan's Wake. A transcript of the opening chapter of James Joyce's Finnegan's Wake, with the author's edition written in by hand, has turned up in Texas after being discovered in a private collection last year in Paris. Quote, it's a major literary find, unquote, said Dr. Thomas F. Stanley, director of the Ransom Humanities Research Center at the University of Texas at Austin, who is the author or editor of 7 books on Joyce. The center acquired the typescript and related Joyce papers after Staley received a tip from a friend in Paris that they existed. The transcript, along with other literary papers, was owned by the 90-year-old widow of Stuart Gilbert, a friend and research assistant of Joyce's, who died in 1969. The transcript and other papers were bought for an undisclosed amount.
Message for Bob. If you're live now, you should tape Mulrooney on CFRB 1010.
Bobby, it's Gerald.
Hi, Jerry.
Yeah.
Hey, Jerry.
I just got a new toy, and it sends and receives pieces of paper from around the world. That's right. A fax machine. So, if Bobby knows places or people who like to send strange and interesting information over the telephone, why, I'd love to get some of those telephone numbers. Let me know, Bobby. Sayonara, boob.
Hi, this is Scott for Bob. Just wanted to let him know I'm back in town, but not at the same address or phone number. I'm actually staying out in Burlington. I could never hate Bob, even if he does make me think every once in a while. I'm really enjoying the Marshall McLuhan. That guy's a laugh a line. I'm worried about Michael Dyer, that bit about losing weight and hair. That wasn't scripted, was it? And I guess I'll be talking to you Wednesday night's show. Everyone's stealing my flack, Bob, except for you.
Shockabilly record. the new Shockabilly record.
Right. It's a long night. I'm not sure what's going on.
What is this?
Where's Mike?
New Shockabilly.
Are you Mike?
No. This here? This is
Mike. Yeah.
This is Mike. This is Cup. This is Funny Noises.
Very good.
Yo, Bob. I'm calling on behalf of the cabal of homeless sub G9. Thanks for the slack, good buddy. Catch you next time. What is Bob to me? Well, who else would call me up just to correct me on my pronunciation? Who else would give me the winning numbers? Who else would teach me how to make love to my woman? Who else would cut me that slack? Who else?
Me, big me.
Bob, thank you. Dang, I almost forgot. Who else has new information? Brand new information. Bob and only Bob.
Ah, good. Much message tonight.
Yeah, but you know who else can give you that new information?
Who?
Weekly World News.
No.
Didn't you see today? Didn't you see the headlines?
Which ones?
Mom sticks kids to wall using Velcro. It's the Velcro kids. They're going to be recording for Columbia. They're the new guys that are going right alongside those five problems from Boston.
This stuff.
Yeah.
Velcro.
No. Well, this is foam rubber, but yeah.
It sounds like Velcro.
But you know,
micro
like,
Velcro.
You know the those Velcro kids on the wall. Those are the new pop sensations. They're going to be taking over from the new kids on the block.
I can't. That's lowbrow, Bob.
No,
I'm
no.
Highbrow, Bob.
No, this is commercial radio, Kent.
Yeah, but you're saying that this is like World News Report? I mean, I'm Solar News Report, Mythic
no,
News
no,
Report.
No, Weekly World News. No, these are the guys that
I know,
tell you
they
about,
are.
Yeah, you know, your 1945 bomber found on the moon.
Advertising. It's just a manipulative satire on advertising.
Yeah, well, they give you the new Bob news every so often, and it's in there. You just
okay,
have to
kid.
Dig for it.
Okay, kid, you're on tonight. You're at their controls.
This is a coup.
Let's see what kind of creativity you can produce, all right, under these conditions.
Yeah.
Now, here's the opening probe. And we know that Quebec left in 1990 at Canada at the age of 122 on May 22nd. Then the Pinks found out it was official on June 22nd, right? There's the 22. Mm-hmm. So that must mean that someone's trying to give 22 a bad name, a bad aura.
I think it's Brian.
Well, the Bolshevik, the European yep. oligarchs, the 18 gang. All right, let's note that. What else would I like to say? You know, it's significant tonight that you're on, Kent, because you're featuring Bob Marshall's interview with LaRouche.
Mm-hmm.
Five after 10 after 2.
About 5 after 2, it should be on.
And you played part one 2 weeks ago, and mm-hmm. I guess the camera came back, so you're here with Bob and Mike Saab-Celeste in a kind of way for the fourth year. Mike felt last week, the last show, that something would be different this fourth year, the tetrad year. Have we flipped into the opposite? Have we pushed Mike to the extreme, and now we have the opposite characteristics?
Well, you remember 2 years ago.
Yeah. This is the anniversary.
You know, Bob went down, or not Bob, sorry, but Mike went down to Nicaragua. And,
yeah.
and there's the furry lint coup.
Oh, yeah, when Mike wasn't around, yeah.
So,
yeah, that was August 28th.
This will be the LaRouche coup.
Yeah, August 28th, 1988. So, it was very significant that we did at the end of our third year, 2 weeks ago, we did that media ecological situation of dead air for 10 to 22 minutes,
yeah.
somewhere in there, maybe 14 minutes, maybe 18, depends on what the significance of the fourth year will be. But what do you got in there next? You got the X's?
No.
Oh, good, yeah.
I had a cassette of my own there.
Oh, come on.
It's for the creativity aspect of the show.
All right.
It's one of my own cassettes.
We'll deal with some of those messages. Maybe now. Let's just deal with one of the first ones. Tom Rich was communicating via his phone there, his airplane. You blipped out the opening comments by Tom
yeah.
Rich, the first message where he said he was flying at 35,000 feet, and that's
yeah.
why he had that great sound background.
Mm-hmm.
And he pointed out that the metaphor for the hidden ground is the long fuse. You think that's a good metaphor?
Yes.
Yeah, the long fuse. Well, you know, it's like waiting for a horrible moment. And then the only antidote to that is waiting for slack and having slack, right?
True.
And the way to have slack is to have the situation where you're planning that every move is your next. You know, you're eclectic and encyclopedic.
No, my last move is my next.
Yeah, that's one of them. Mm-hmm. Yeah, every move is your next. So whatever happens, you're ready, right? So you gotta
sit back. Not necessarily. I'm just here pushing buttons.
You see, okay, and then the next story, message referred to as Zappa is running for solar prime minister, United Nations prime minister, you know, intergalactic paradigm shift. The 22 aspect there is that caller is telling us this in 1990, the significance of Frank, and that the flip point will happen in the year 2012. And it will happen on Zappa's birthday, December 21st. The other point is, from 1990 to 2012, from this point till then, he's 22 years, right? So it's important that this person recognize that subgenius pink and or both, you know, slash sign, that he, she recognized this pattern in 1990, 22 years before it happens. As for Finnegan's Wake's papers, the transcript, Joyce annotated transcript of the first chapter being found in Texas, proof that my church began in Texas, well before Stang set up the hijacked version. And it's only appropriate that, of course, the scripts and transcripts and things be found there, right, in Texas. Did you notice that the noisy one, the musical noisy,
yeah,
good one, mm-hmm, the take two one, the caller had to do it twice.
Yeah.
Did you hear what the fatherly voice, the patriarchal voice was saying?
Mm.
What do you remember what he said? He said, he's screaming at somebody, and he's saying, when you turn on that TV when you're watching it. That was good. That's what he was screaming. Those archivists, they can rewind and hear that. When he's screaming, demanding, mandating that when you're watching TV, you have it on. That's a pink attitude towards pattern recognition.
Mm-hmm.
That's definitely an insightful quote from that caller, and a good little bit of making there. Because, you know, you study the form, not the content. You don't even have it on to study it. Just study the effects in your neighbors and your audiences and your friends and, you know, the other ones. The other, you know, the capital.
Those other people.
You got a call? Okay.
No.
Oh.
I'm just setting up for it there.
Oh, okay.
Okay, sir.
And then about Psychic TV, you could... didn't you work with Psychic TV? Has that ever been announced here at the station? Yeah, I think you work with Psychic TV yourself. So again, the karma fits. You're sitting here when this little Jerry Belanger, you know, Sunday night programmer, if he's still doing it.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, he...
he's listed in the book now, Bob. He's an actual person here.
Well, I was very cagey.
He's just not a TVA.
Yeah, I was very responsible there. I edited out his phone number. He left it there for his fax machine. But you, having worked for Psychic TV, what do you think of Jerry's being rather exasperated with their hypnotist function of Satan? What do you make of that?
It's not really dealing with Satan. It's dealing more with the Robert Anton Wilson aspect and a lot of Manson.
You mean imitating Anton Wilson style?
Yeah.
The Psychic TV, they like his literature?
Yeah, apparently.
The phone. That might be Jerry with his rebuttal.
This could be Jerry with his rebuttal. Or it could be Jerry calling me up saying, where's my Chris and Cozy facts? And,
why do you think Jerry got fed up with Psychic? What happened to him there?
What, with Psychic TV?
Yeah.
They're really boring.
You went to the show?
No.
Okay, let's...
No.
I like the way he called them 23. That's important. They're from Europe. Mm-hmm. 23 and 18 are similar. Let's take a call.
Okay, well, I'm just going to check and see if this sucker works.
Yep.
Hello, you're on CKL. Sure, Psychic TV me now, right? CKLN.
Congratulations, Kent.
No, oh, well, thank you.
I have to congratulate you because this is your coup.
This is my coup. My coup. No, it's not Michael. This is just a coup.
This is Ray Roy. And I had to continue with the Rays because there are some people who are waiting for another Ray. This is the fourth Ray, the orange Ray, the brow chakra.
Didn't we do this 2 weeks ago?
No, we didn't complete it, Bob. We just tickled their fence.
Okay, you just do the completion.
Yeah, okay, the fourth Ray, harmony through conflict. special virtues, strong affection, sympathy.
We did that, Ray. I remember, Ray. You did to go further ahead.
Quickness of intellect.
Yeah,
perception.
We did that. Yeah.
Okay. Grammars, diffusion of interest and energy. Ooh. Impracticality and glamour of imagination.
Hey, now that's symbolized by Mike diffusing his energy. It started to happen last show. Now he's impractical. He didn't show up. Okay, right on, Ray. Anymore?
Changeableness.
Yeah.
Vagueness and lack of objectivity. Constant inner and outer conflict causing argument and acrimony.
Let me just stop you there, Ray. This idea of inner and outer conflict is... Hey, come on, Ken. Ken thinks it's his show, you know.
It is my coup, remember?
Ray, this thing of conflict in inner and outer, that under tactile conditions, the inner and the outer, visual and acoustic space, are rearview mirror modalities that fake their pain while we remain and float in tactile slack, right?
Yes.
So that's not the conflict audible.
In between that they can't even see.
Or hear. Oh, they can feel it, but they can't say it.
They can't be it.
Yeah, they can't be it. They just feel it. Okay, next.
Continuing causing argument and acrimony.
Yeah.
Dissatisfaction because of sensitive response to beauty and that which is higher and better, Bob. Well, we don't have to go on about that.
Yeah, we did that last time.
The ray of struggle, Raja's activity, and Tama's inertia... balanced, so man is torn in combat, which leads to the birth of Horus, or of the Christ born from the throes of constant suffering and pain.
Oh, that's Gnostic, icy Osiris Horus, right? Yeah, that's not... What's the source of this knowledge? Steiner?
It's quite multidimensional.
Steiner's one of them.
Well, he's definitely one of them. Yeah. He's also Egyptian Gnosticism.
Do you think Perry did not... Did Perry Didelascu have any influence in this? Did Perry do anything in mapping this out?
Perry
Didelascu. I guess you don't know him.
I think so, but he talks
about the rays. And...
Anyways, continuing varies from brilliant conversations to gloomy silences. Love's color.
Oh, we had that last week, didn't we? That gloomy, optimistic silence.
And 22 minutes of ecological freedom. Approach to healing, massage, and magnetism used with knowledge. You've been massaging us for a long time, Bob.
Yeah.
And magnetizing us. Approach to path.
Yeah, magnetizing, that's the right metaphor. Not unifying, magnetizing.
Magnetizing.
The electric magnetic universe. That's what it is.
Electromagnetizing, as the psychotronic shamans would say.
And you notice how we can resonate on that magnet? Like, I think it's great that you can talk, that Kent can respond, and Kent can, you know, improvise underneath with the his background. It's just a great jam we got here.
Kent is a great subliminal programmer. He's a great programmer, but he's a subliminal programmer, too.
Yeah.
Approach to path. Self-control, thus gaining equilibrium, thus gaining balance amongst the warring forces of his nature. Hatha yoga is said to be very dangerous for this Ray type. Be careful.
Okay, I got something to respond there, Ray. I have a list of the characteristics of pinks versus the characteristics of subgenius. Now, you're talking about argument. I have here, a pink is an ideologue as generalist, where the subgenius is the artist, in quotes, as comprehensivist. The pink has a concern for the primacy of concepts and argument, whereas the subgenius gives primacy to percepts and dialogue. The pink starts with causes, like Dr. Watson, you know? Remember Dr. Watson, Sherlock Holmes? He starts with the causes, whereas Sherlock Holmes starts with the effects and waits for the denouement. Yeah, and then the pink is involved in formal logic, exact definition, yes or no thinking, the law of excluded middle. You know, the subgenius is ecologic. He looks for the exact word for art, poetics, the yin-yang, yes and no thinking, the complementarity of the logos. The pink is deadly earnest. The subgenius is deliberately playful. The pink is dealing with old ground rules and new artificial intelligence, whereas the subgenius takes on new process patterns and old human wisdom. The pink classifies abstract figures without grounds. The subgenius explores changing figures on changing grounds. The pink deals with the visible plot minus invisible subplot in the human situation, whereas the subgenius deals with the transformation of plot into subplot and vice versa in human drama. The pink is agnostic, confined to history forever. The subgenius is a Christian, touching eternity through history. That's controversial to say that, eh? Subgenius is Christian.
Wow, crypto-pagan?
The true church. The pink, he or she, it criticizes conclusions, whereas the subgenius reconsiders premises. For the pink, breakthroughs lead to breakdown. For the subgenius, breakdowns lead to breakthroughs. Pink determined by technology, and the subgenius is predetermines technology. The pink descends
Tesla.
We're gonna get to Tesla one of these nights. And the pink descends to doom via rearview mirror. The subgenius ascends from doom and dune by understanding media. For the pink, all futures are past. For the subgenius, all futures are present. For the pink, logical maturity that eliminates paradox. For the subgenius, human maturity that savors paradox. For the pink, Finn slumbering and merely reacting to effects imposed by technologies. The subgenius, Finn again, actively anticipating effects of his own technologies. And one more. This goes back to 2 weeks ago when Dave brought in his fairy tale about the broken mirror. Remember that? Yeah, the pink is Humpty Dumpty in bits. The subgenius is Humpty Dumpty whole again. Now...
integration.
You know what happened, Ray? He just walked out, but someone just came in and sat beside me. Just now, grabbed a cool drink of Spritzer Blueberry. Put out by After the Fall. You've had a drink of that, right? Oh,
yeah, where is my Spritzer anyways, Bob? I'm doing this caffeine gig here.
The finest Baldwin has.
Yeah, that's right, Baldwin Foods, Dobbstown headquarters. You know who's sitting beside me? This is really a flip for the fourth year. We have for a guest tonight. We have Mike Dyer as a guest.
I love it. Michael, did you see the video yet?
Yes, I did, Ray.
Not so close to the mic. Yeah.
Mike's not used to it. Studio act.
I'm nervous.
I must commend all of you, man. You're working in the most incredible conditions. In case you listeners don't realize, these guys are doing the impossible. They're using equipment which is obsolete, which is already obsolete, and they're doing miraculous things by creating a radio show.
Yeah,
it's community radio, and the station looks like it. It's just been ravaged. Bring your own headphones. Bring your own microphone. Bring everything.
It looks like doom, but we
tapes.
Yeah, we don't bring your own electricity. We don't descend to doom, eh? We transcend and ascend from doom.
You know what? We even brought our own mic.
See, we have to bring our own mic. At multi-level term. Mike, you care to respond? Or?
No, I'm an observer tonight.
You're too close, Mike.
Mike, what did you, okay. I have the tape on, right, okay.
Archival worries.
Did you see the video yet, Mike?
Yes, I've had a chance. Thank you, Ray.
Didn't you just say you didn't?
I did.
Oh, you did?
I did.
You did say you didn't.
What did you experience?
No, I did say I've seen it.
What did you experience? Ray's wondering.
What did you experience from there?
Well, I made an immediate...
It made you late.
An immediate connection. Yeah, I just finished. I just shut off the VCR, and I'm sorry for my lateness.
48 hours transfixed, eh?
Yeah. Oh, I see. That's what... It's a 22-minute video. So.
Well, the music made a striking impression on me, I guess, because I knew the music, and I thought it worked really well with the imagery that you had.
What's the music?
It's mostly Soviet friends.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah. There's a little bit of our own.
Yeah. Yeah, but I thought the music and the sound overall was very good.
I knew you'd like it.
Mm-hmm. No, it struck many chords, and it was an unsettling tape.
Well, sir, mm-hmm. Lunar.
Yes, unsettling. Good
work. Our network will be more solar, Lunar. You'll see. Bob will be helping us. His solar queen may be involved.
Yeah.
Connie?
Yeah, Connie mm-hmm. has a. Yeah, I mentioned to Connie Ray, she certainly would be willing to join in the entertainment business as a military operation.
I'd say that it's time that we bring the Solar Queen to video, Underground World.
Yeah, okay, Ray, we gotta get into hard facts. Let me, maybe you can stay on. No, I better not. He probably interrupted the next tape. We're going to go into, Ray, great call back. If we don't get any calls, it's getting into summer. We don't know what's out there listening and joining and willing to jam, right? So, Ray, thanks for the fourth year sum up. Mike, you missed it, but it did express
I was listening on the car. In the
oh, good, yeah, good. You heard it. Yeah. You heard about your losing your hair. Yeah, you heard that. Okay. Okay, Ray.
Have you back with us, Mike? We're very friendly type crew organization. We let you blend right back in with us.
Yeah, well, Mike's here to promote his new John Doe video productions, and of course, your video will be one of the first products offered, right?
Thank you.
Even though we can't
you
use the term.
Just don't try and make any money.
Yeah. Of course not.
Okay, Ray, listen, I think it's appropriate that... Listen, you saw the Subgenius is... demonstrating in Quebec the other day, right? They're so happy after the June 22nd. I mean, it's official now that that Bob has taken over. We fragmented the visual space of Canada. But I think we need to know why Bob was confident about this and find out what the exes told them, right? You got the exes on there, Ken? Don't start. Yeah, God.
Yes, I do have the exes.
Yeah, well, this is the exes, April 11th, 1990. It's two months before, many years in electric speed-up times, but 2 months ago, technically, visual space-wise, this is the exes predicting what happened to Meech Lake and the Quebec situation and giving us a hint of what's coming for the future. So I hope a lot of union people are listening tonight.
The real story.
Okay, Ray, this is the exes, so we'll talk to you later. Thank you.
Yeah, see ya. Feel ya. Bye.
Bye.
In this period 90, as there are certain softenings within the economy and certain pressures upon the Canadian dollar, you'll expect that the squeals from Ontario to Ottawa concerning interest rates, concerning excise taxes and the like will be very loud. The government of Ontario talks very strongly with the government of Canada concerning these matters. A very vocal province. Now, in addition to this, because there will be no contest vis-a-vis the Meech Lake situation, neither that it is on or it is off. It will be declared by the government of Canada as no contest, no decision, almost as though it never existed. And it will go back into committee, into discussion, to be worked upon at a later point. Do not expect that Quebec itself will form itself as a free state. However, in the interim, expect that the province of Quebec will so arrange things that it will be more profitable for companies who manufacture in Quebec to sell their products in the United States rather than it is in the remainder of Canada. And not that certain treaties will be created, but certain environments will be created so this happens. This is being deliberately created so that more companies in English-speaking Canada will move their manufacturing processes, their assembly processes, head offices to Quebec, because there will be certain creations of taxational situations which will be profitable for companies to do so. Expect not a trade war between Ontario and Quebec, but a taxational war between Ontario and Quebec. Expect that, it happens. Much of the problem of manufacturing in Ontario is that even though free trade exists and has certain considerable advantages, that with the inclusion of Mexico in the free trade agreement as is being done at the present with the Manculadora, an area where products assembled in this area would go into the United States relatively duty-free and be construed as United States constructed or assembled goods, but this will affect the situation in Canada. It is expect this, that a certain number of companies will not move so much to the United States as they move to Mexico itself. Expect more of this.
Well, what do you make of that, Kent? I think that was profoundly accurate.
Yes, so do I. I wasn't really paying attention. I was screwing around with the lights here.
So you agree with me? You trust what I'm saying?
I trust what you say, Bob.
Yeah, that it was profoundly accurate. That was April 11th, 1990. I think it showed you what is happening. They knew, therefore I knew, and therefore we have slack here. I don't know if I mentioned in the characteristics between the pink and the subgenies that the pink was deadly earnest. Did I say the subgenies was deliberately playful?
I believe you did.
Did you catch that on the car, Mike, coming in?
Yeah.
Mike, there's a little thing here. Mm-hmm. Mike's pointing out in some notes.
I didn't mean to be nosy. It's on this, on the other side of the window. You've got so much information.
Yeah, it says here, question, how many time zones in the Soviet Union, Mikey? Now,
there's 11.
Where does that come from?
Well, about a year ago, if I remember, we'd have to get the archives to check this out. You said something about time zones in the Soviet Union in your, you know, scattered pre-Bob realization state of mind before you before Czechoslovakia happened.
Yes.
Yeah, with your confusion, you know, under the influence
of
Stang's.
There's only eight now.
Under the influence of Stang's church, there's only eight. And I think I wanted to remind you that I checked it out, and I think there were 11. Not now, but there were 11, half of 22. That's a lot of time zones. And then we have, just above that, we have Hegelian history, a double-blind crossover placebo-control experiment by triple agents. Hegelian history is a double-blind, that's from medicine, a double medical testing, a double-blind crossover placebo-control experiment by triple agents. Hmm. Let's take the call, Kent.
Yeah, it just reminds me, just while Kent's going to the phone.
Yeah.
Listening to some of your comments on the way in, and
what was it like to be? That's a great experience.
It was a great experience. One that I'm glad it happened.
Hello.
I think I'm a better person.
This is C.K. Allen.
Oh, sorry.
Hey,
never mind. I'll come back.
Yeah, yeah, you want to come back?
Let's see. Caller.
Hello.
Yeah. Oh, a woman.
Yeah. Hi. This is Bob.
Yeah.
Hi. I'd like to talk to Bob, woman to woman.
All right. I'm a woman.
Hi.
Hey, I'm glad to be acknowledged in the fourth year. It's a good sign for the fourth year to be finally acknowledged as a woman. No combativeness. You're right. Definitely a subgenius.
Well, thank you. Well, I know there's a lot of other women out there listening to you, and I know you must be very frustrated that they're not calling in.
Yeah.
So I have a suggestion for your show.
I was thinking
maybe like sort of...
This is not an imposition. This will be a co-creative suggestion, right?
Oh, yeah, totally.
Okay, all right.
After all, we're both women.
Yeah.
This is sort of an idea for like a woman's corner idea, you know, practical household tips, that sort of thing.
Ah, okay.
You know, and to start us off, I have you're talking about jamming before.
Yeah.
Well, I have some jam recipes.
Okay,
isn't
go
that
ahead.
Great?
Yeah, this is wonderful.
This is strawberry and rhubarb jam.
Oh, my favorite.
Rhubarb.
Yeah, rhubarb jam.
The rhubarb bite.
Yeah.
Rhubarb.
Yeah.
And it's for two jars. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Have you got a pencil?
Yep.
And the other thing I was thinking is, you know, maybe I could send this in and you could photocopy it for your listeners if they call in wanting it.
Certainly.
That's sort of an idea,
yeah.
You know.
Okay. Wonderful, wonderful.
All right, so you have your two jars, and you wash them and you set them aside on the counter. And then you need 2 cups of strawberries, 1 cup of rhubarb, washed and peeled and chopped up.
Yeah.
1 cup of apples that you've peeled or skinned and diced, and 2 cups of sugar, and you put that all into a pot on the stove, and you don't add any more liquid, just turn it up to medium or so, you know, and let it gently simmer, and while it's simmering, you skim off the foam on the top, and then you keep on simmering until there's no more foam, and then it'll start to get a bit jelly, and you may need a little more sugar, just a touch, you just taste, and then you turn the stove off, and you put it into the clean jars, but don't put the lid on tightly until it's down to room temperature.
Yeah.
And then you put it in the fridge, and then there you go, 2 jars of strawberry rhubarb jam. Mm. ready for breakfast.
Are you psychic?
Practically.
Yes, because Connie is putting together a Woman's Corner recipe book. You don't have any contact with her,
kidding.
Do you? Really, and she has this recipe already in the book.
You're
scanned
joking.
It. I'm not joking.
Isn't that?
This is, how did you, when did you, you think of this, or is this something you've done for years?
Oh, I've done this for years and my mother before.
Mm-hmm.
It's from the old country.
It's a great combination.
From the old country?
Yeah.
You mean Iceland? How old?
Live from JamCon 84 with Crosley Bendit.
Did you hear that? JamCon 84? Get that background?
Yeah, that's nice background.
Yeah, what country was it?
Iceland.
You are from Iceland.
Well, thereabouts.
Yeah, the old country.
The old
the
country.
The cold country.
Yeah, yeah.
You're welcome, and Connie's welcome, anybody's welcome, certainly to enhance this project of the
right.
Women's Corner. This
yeah.
is the, I mean, we should actually make this, bring it in, and guests can have it. And then maybe,
right?
We don't want to get competitive, do we? We don't want to have people judge the recipes.
Oh,
no.
That's so silly. That's a male kind of a thing to do.
Oh, yeah, that's right,
you know?
Yeah.
We want to keep this female.
That's right. So what about this more along a material jamming? What do you have on the... Do you got any jam on the level of percept? I mean, food is a percept, but got any other levels if you want to put the Woman's Corner on?
Well, I mean, there's just such a vast world of women's issues out there.
Yeah.
Everything from, you know, child care to, I don't know, how to get stains out of carpet.
Yeah.
And make from Mike's hair loss, I don't know. I mean, I heard that earlier. I was really upset. Tons of recipes for that sort of thing.
Hmm.
So there's all those kinds of levels.
So you will Xerox some of this and or send it, and we can read it off. So
sure,
if you can't make
sure
it in.
Sure, there's some other ladies out there. Perhaps you have some, or Connie might want to share something on the air, too.
Oh, yeah, Connie has a book out called...
Or Filbert.
Or Filbert. Yeah, it's called When You Can't Reach the Doctor, and it's a fantastic book of her extraordinary diverse knowledge and modalities of healing.
Mm-hmm.
You can get it. Can't give out the
show?
Address, maybe. What?
Through your show?
Yeah, you call me after the show or ask Kent or somebody off the air. We'll give you the address where to get the book. A very important book.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
well, this is a whole new beginning, isn't it?
Yeah, you've really started off the fourth year. I don't know if you've been following it. We began the fourth year this year. I mean, this show.
Right.
And following the tetrad, which I felt was going to be happening in this fourth year, is that we flipped Bob from proving or trying to express his womanhood to being acknowledged and now developing a Woman's Corner. This is
right.
So naturally evolving, Mike.
It's so it's practical, too.
Yeah.
That's the thing. It's so practical.
That's what women are.
Practical.
Our next program yeah. is
I'm practical.
From
you are.
Yeah.
One of the most practical men I know.
Thank you. Okay, well,
okay.
If you have another recipe, if you haven't fallen asleep in another half hour, an hour, call in another one.
Okay, all right.
If we've got dead air problems.
Okay.
Okay.
Our all right, well, talk to you.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Bye.
That's a wonderful beginning. Goodbye.
Can I just fall asleep?
Yeah. Micah, I can't. Will you cut that jam in? Cut the jam there.
I have an unlimited supply of rhubarb at my disposal if anyone...
Is Mike going over? I can't.
Yes, Mike is going over.
It's like yeah. Kent's out of control. you see, Mike is better. See, Kent, Mike is better than you. He keeps his influence down and below. I can't even hear Mike.
Okay. Hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah, Mike wants to... He was driving in.
Just to follow through me, as a man, and you know, not a woman, but I do make a very good pie as well. I could throw in my two bits worth. And give out my pie recipe.
Well, do we start a men's corner?
I could just submit the recipe and then it could be used.
Under Filbert.
Yeah.
Filbert.
Just to follow through with, listening to I think it was Kent's comment about the new kids on the block on the way. What, can I just tell a quick joke?
Sure, are we going to read this one here?
No, this is a nice selection of jokes here, but our friend Andrew Munger told me this joke.
Okay.
What has 1,000 legs and no pubic hair?
New Kids.
The first two rows of a New Kids on the Block concert. I just in connection,
yeah,
just
yeah,
I
yeah.
made that.
Oh, that's a strong joke.
It's the only joke.
Joke
I know, and I thought I'd tell it tonight.
Oh, okay. I'll use that one on tomorrow, actually.
Okay, yeah, we have here a bunch of jokes. Says here, Mike, well, Mike, you pick out what you like since you don't know any jokes. Try these. Try this one.
I like lecturing. It pays well. The hours are good, and there's no heavy lifting. Bob, you do.
At L.A. Aircraft Factory, it said, emergency exit, authorized personnel only.
Army questionnaire. Have you or any member of your family ever committed suicide?
Yes.
And another one. There goes a person who lights up. Oh, sorry, Mike. Can you do it?
There goes a person who lights up a room just by leaving it.
And then Lord Chesterfield, his last letter to his son, quote, "Dear Junior, get lost, Dad." And a famous one of, Hick LaRouche used to like this one. He used to say, "Alexander Graham Kowalski was the first telephone pole." Just before he became a public figure.
The guy who felt absolutely alone and jumped off the top of his high-rise. As he passed his apartment, he heard the phone ringing.
Well, it's not.
No, it is.
No, it isn't.
It just rang, didn't it?
It did, but the person got scared.
Yeah. Ken's too cynical about the phone. You have to love the phone. You have to embrace it.
And I really
you
don't
have to stroke
like
it.
He started to, he wanted to grab it, right?
Yeah,
like you let it ring.
Sure,
get
sure.
The rhythm.
Here, how's this? I'm stroking the phone. Is this ever so nice and gently? Sort of like, see what happens if the darn thing just lights up, you know?
Now just be a little more patient.
There it is. Yeah, just
okay, I'm really enjoying this. I'd like to say I'm really enjoying this. Not every week, just once.
Oh,
in 4 years.
It's a new, every once every 4 years. Michael, sit over here.
Is there a call there?
There is a call. Okay. Does this person wish to speak to his eminence?
Eminence, not eminence.
Okay, your impotency.
Caller.
Hello.
Hello.
Yep. Yes.
Oh, okay. I can't hear you through my phone. I guess I have to listen to the radio.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It just turned up.
Did you have anything from LaRouche earlier?
We're going to have part two of Bob Marshall's interview with him at 2:05 on Kent's show.
2:10?
Yeah, half hour.
And what about the guy from Chicago? What's his name?
Scully.
Yeah.
He'll have some stuff from him.
Yeah, mm-hmm. He'll be on right at 2:00. He's always on right at 2:00. Which reminds me, you know Spy Magazine?
Yeah.
Yeah. Their new issue, July 1990 issue, has a big article on the Mae Brussels Research Center, Dave Emery, Mae Brussels, Sherman Skolnick.
John. Oh, it does?
Yeah, it's all there. Kent was so excited, he brought me in a copy, assuming that I had no influence in putting it out, but I knew and I had a copy, but he's going to give it to Wynne Morris or somebody. But check out the Spy Magazine.
Spy Magazine, July 1990.
Yeah, it's right on the stands now, and you'll be amazed that they publicize the drama of the Mae Brussels Research Center. Of course, they take a take a couple of shots, but maybe that's their cover operation. Well, it is. I know. I told them, right? But so they won't be considered too serious, but they get the information out to you, subgenii, who can know what the story is really about, right?
Now, didn't you guys have an interview with some sort of prophet guy?
Yeah, we just played the Exus. We call him the Exus. And we just played the Exus. He was prophesying and predicting the fate of Meech Lake. Didn't you just hear that 10 minutes ago?
Yeah, I did. Okay, I was wondering if that was LaRouche or not.
No, that's the Exus. They're from the constellation Bootes. You know, that's where we're going to have our first contact with extraterrestrial intelligence.
Now, what about the medium I heard a few weeks ago?
That's the Exus. The Exus come through a medium.
Okay, but I know there's, on the show after 2:00, they played a medium as well.
Yes, that was the Exus as well.
What did we play there?
I was playing the Future of Toronto.
Yeah, that actually what you heard tonight in Meech Lake is from the April 11th Exus press conference on the Future of Toronto.
Oh, from the press conference.
Yeah, it's the same thing. I just played a particular little excerpt, you know, to celebrate what happened on June 22nd, you know, that Canada disappeared again.
Okay.
And what, there was something else? Is there anything we have to tell this person? Use your psychic ability, Mike. Do you know about the Barbara Honecker tape? Okay, ask Kent to play it sometime because George
Kent,
Bush.
Will you play it sometime?
Yes, I will.
Because the CIA guy who did the interview over 33 LA stations in September 88 to influence the Bush election, actually to stop Bush, this former CIA person has been identified. And we have a new guest.
Yes, we have a new guest.
Caller, we just have a redhead walked in.
Yes.
The person's not sure who
Charles.
Is Bob.
This is Charles.
Oh, you know this person, Ken?
Yes, I do.
Oh, it's for your show?
I'm not sure. He's just coming in here because he needs slack and, you know.
Look at the look in his eye. Ooh.
Yeah.
He's receptive.
Just,
he's receptive. Caller, we're having a discharge right here.
It's a devival.
Right here with you, caller. I think we'll have to give you credit. And Mike's never been able to look through my papers. And he's sitting here looking through my papers, you know, and he sees that, yes, by gosh, the show is scripted.
I think we should take a medical.
Mike is taking over. Call. What did you want to know? You just want to know who these people's voices were, right?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, great. Well, Skolnick, if you ever want to call him yourself, 312-731-1100.
Is that his response line?
Yeah, that's where you get the messages.
Oh, well, now, how did you guys ever get permission to, like, broadcast his line?
Well, I know him personally. He works with me.
Get out of here, really?
Yeah, and we used to, Bob Marsh used to play him back in 84 and 85, 86, 87 on International Connection. He's been an old standby at CKLN.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's like a private radio station. He has a phone system. It's computerized, so it has 20 inputs. You call in. If someone else has already called in and triggered off the message, you get to hear the message at that point. But the computer knows that you came in late and will replay the message for you. But the caller that triggered it off, if they did before you, they will be disconnected after they heard the whole message.
Now, what I want to know is, who is funding him?
Nobody. He's on welfare. He's a cripple. And,
get out of here.
Yeah?
He's he can afford 20 phone lines.
Well, once you put it in, he might have a few people, but I visited him in 1988, and he's not living in any extravagant, luxurious situation. And he's very poor. He did have, his parents did give him some little trust, which was stolen, which was ripped off in 63, and that's what got him into studying the corruption in the Chicago courts, because his parents lost the trust that set up for him. So he started investigating, and he became a major figure in Chicago in 69. He was even in Time magazine in 69, and then by 71, he started exposing the CIA intelligence control of the media itself, rather than he was just exposing the court corruption and the bureaucratic corruption. And once he started to expose the media content corruption, the control of it, they wouldn't allow him on the media anymore. So in 1971, he started this phone service. And this has been going, next year will be 20 years he's been doing this.
Now, why don't they have someone like this in Toronto? Why do we have to listen to this guy from Chicago?
Well, you ask the Canadians that. Have the Canadians ever done anything original?
Well, I don't know, but I understand.
You don't know. See, they may have, but we don't know, right?
Well, I understand you guys are being monitored by CSIS, I believe.
Yeah? Oh, yeah, we're monitored. I mean, I told them to monitor Bob Marshall. You see, there's two people we're dealing with. There's Bob Marshall and there's me, Bob Dobbs.
Mm-hmm.
And Bob Marshall promoted Sherman Skolnick, Dr. Beter, Mae Brussel, and the Executive Intelligence Review, which is LaRouche's organization. And then Bob Dobbs promotes a wider, more comprehensive perceptual view. The Bob Marshall operation is called Who's Forgotten Furry Lint, which is based on what happened to Larry Flint during the election campaign in 1984. And the Bob Dobbs is based on the theatrical drama called Hand Signals for the Blind. This is the longest running theater performance piece in Toronto. It's been going for 6 years now, here in CKLN.
Now, don't you guys worry what the intelligence community might do to you guys?
No. We know that they could kill you. Well, they could kill us any time they want. You can't stop it. So what's there to worry about? You know, we're looking forward to death. Not that we worship death, but I'm not afraid of death. I mean, death is going to be fun.
There's a phone line could be traced
right now.
What'd you say?
My phone line could be traced right now.
Yeah, but are you afraid of dying?
Yes.
Oh, okay. You need to listen to the show a little longer. You need to get some more slack. It's healthy to be afraid. I mean, don't run into it. You know, don't want it. But when you die, you won't even know you're dead. You'll just be... What will we say? You'll just be... dreaming.
The absence of living.
Yeah, you'll be dreaming.
Yeah, like, do you remember yourself before you lived?
Yeah, you do when you dream. So you die every night when you go to sleep. You go unconscious, you can't control it. You could have a heart attack while you're asleep. You couldn't control it. So you die every night, you go unconscious.
Well, I think I'm afraid of living, too.
Well, it's wise to be like that today. You know, you should be afraid of living because most of it's toxic.
Is it?
Yeah.
Those 11 time zones again.
Half of 22.
Good night.
Good night. Thank you.
It was a sobering phone call.
Yes. Interesting semi-wall-like response, you know, like not taking us, not humoring us, confronting us.
Yeah. I guess he wasn't interested in the rhubarb jam recipe, and we'll just hold on to that.
We have another caller. Would you like to take it there, Squire Bob?
Sure. He's so polite. Yeah.
I know. Isn't it revolting?
Look at Charlie's fallen asleep.
CKLN.
It's almost the witching hour. I'd just like to say that the elementals are taking care of Bob. Bob is being looked after, and those assassins who think that it is easy to get Bob, beware.
Yeah, Ray, do you ever see the movie or read the book Slaughterhouse 5 by Kurt Vonnegut? Mm. You ever see that? Well, if you remember, the guy knew when he was going to die, and he just acted out his role in life. So that's my situation.
Sure.
I mean, I know when I'm going to die, so, you know, it's just going to happen. But it'll be so perfect up to that point.
You're also thousands of years old.
Those who would attempt it are just going to blow their cover.
That's right.
Into outer space and all over the
planet. Hello, Mark.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you, first of all, about
Well, that's Kent improvising, Ray.
Kent improvising.
Yeah, so I appreciate you, you know, comforting us.
What do I would just like to add a point to our drug war, the schmug war.
Oh, listen, Ray, this ain't scripted, but we got an incredible excerpt coming up about the drug war. You ever?
Okay, well,
you know, we got.
I just wanted to just give us a little piece from the Death of Ignorance from our Californian friends.
Is that a book?
This is a drug structural comparison chart. LSD and other hallucinogens are thought to enhance the activity of norepinephrine and dopamine while inhibiting the depressing effects of serotonin. Information coming through the reticular activating system, the diffuse network of neurons in the brainstem that regulates consciousness, is diffused, causing an alteration in the perception of time on the physical plane. This inhibition then causes a bombardment of the cerebral cortex of energies from higher planes to move its focus from the subconscious memory to the conscious mind. I guess it's just dreaming awake again, Bob. Should go back to sleep, right? I think that all of this expansion should start contracting again, kiddies. And all this diethylamide is bad for you. Like, sure, lysergic acid is from the plant kingdom, but diethylamide is made in a lab. And we weren't made in no lab. We're not robotoids, are we? Why would we want to do synthetics that turn our minds into a labyrinth? I once did an astral plane journey into diethylamide and discovered that it was just a big maze anyways. Why would I want to live in a maze?
Yeah, that's amazing.
Why would anybody want to live in a maze?
Amazing. You know, Ray, LSD is the inner trip via and parallel to the movie experience and the cartoon experience, whereas heroin is the TV making electric experience because it puts on the whole universe immediately. That's what heroin does. That's why heroin is more popular than LSD. It lasted longer as a sensory preference.
Well, opium is the original, right?
Yeah. Whatever it is, as opposed to LSD, which gives you dreams that money can buy in cartoon form. Heroin doesn't give you any dreams, it just puts you into
that. I'm not saying that lysergic acid is necessarily bad, but I just had all these bad experiences with this diethylamide that they've blended into it. It's this semi-organic reality.
Well, do you want to go back to that escargot? the ergo?
Oh, well, just for purple moons, Bob.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, we're still part shamans here.
Well, Ray, we're talking drugs. I want to play something now. See, if we're being perceived as frivolous, then we got to put some hard facts on again. Mm-hmm. Okay, now there's a new author named Michael Levine, former DEA agent who rose to the top of the cocaine cartels. Well, I don't need to introduce it anymore, but he's got a book out.
Kent, have you got that tape? Which one?
Everything is all.
It's the one with the Michael Levine. Yeah, that with the Michael Levine, the right side. Mm-hmm.
So what this, Ray, this is April 23rd, 1990. Michael Levine was interviewed on the National Public Broadcasting Network. Yeah, PBS in the States,
yes.
And on the McNeil-Lehrer report. It's quite
17.
Yeah, it's quite interesting what he had to say right there on national, maybe international, satellite TV. What he had to say about his experience behind his new book called Deep Cover. And he confirms what Bob has said and what Bob Dobbs has said, what Bob Marshall said, that the Pentagon is dope incorporated. All right? So just check out, just listen to this, Ray. And
I've been taking my college course, Bob, and those who are ready, go to Bob and get your college courses.
Yeah. You know, what is it? A BA is... and then you got MA. What is it?
MA.
BSc. BSc. Well, we know what BS is. MA.
PhD.
PhD is Bob piled higher and deeper, right? Right? Isn't that the way it goes, Mike? There's a BS, yes. MS.
An escalating.
Yeah, BS, MS is more of the same.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't turn on.
And then PhD's piled higher and deeper. Yeah, I think we got that across.
Let's go to this tape.
Okay, so this tape is serious, about 5 minutes, I guess. And,
anyways, just be careful. Don't be cautious, kiddies.
But Ray, you start off telling us not to worry about that person telling us to be cautious. Now you tell us to be cautious, Ray.
Of course. Because we're multidimensional.
That's right. We're going in all directions at once, aren't we? Every move, every statement is your next. So the thing is about this, imagine this is being broadcast on the pink media.
Of course. And
I mean...
Not us, but this PBS thing coming up.
Yeah, but I mean, they're listening, Bob. I keep hearing evidence of it. They're using all your lingo all over the radio.
Yeah, like Philip Marchand, you know, the book reviewer, or Arthur Croker.
I heard it on CFRB.
Brian Fawcett. You see his book, Public Eye, you know, on the disappearance, an investigation into the disappearance of the world. I mean, they're not even well done, these books, but certainly are influenced by Bob's work.
Yeah, just poor plagiarism, Bob.
Well, Ray, at least you're following it and noticing it. And one person is doing it. Someone's got to do it. You're doing it. Thank you, Ray.
Yeah, we've got to have our agents everywhere. So
yeah.
Keep working, guys. And girls.
You like the idea of the Woman's Corner?
Oh, it's amazing. I would like to suggest that we could substitute our sugar for honey and support the apiculturists.
Substitute honey into...
Yeah, honey for sugar.
All right, okay.
Because, you know, we're solar. Honey is a solar product.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Yeah. Okay, that's Ray's first Men's Corner alternative recipe. Thank you, Ray.
Pleasant dreams.
Good night.
Mike has taken over.
I hope you watch all your videos, but like turn it off sometimes because we need media ecology.
You don't need to watch TV with it turned on, right, Ray? You like that idea?
Yeah.
If your parents are getting mad at you for watching TV without it turned on, you tell them Bob said so.
Turn that thing on.
Well, I'm listening to the TV.
Turn it on.
Electromagnetic.
The new parental slogan. Turn it on.
Frequency radiation, Mama.
Okay, Ray. Okay, Ray, we have 400 other calls.
For those of you taping out there, this is a brief pause. You've been listening to a recording from June 28th, 1990. It was the Mike Dyer program with guest Bob Dobbs, co-hosted by Kent Perry. And I'm going to go to a promo now, and when we come back, part two. And then at around 10:15, 10 minutes past 10 or so, a special treat, I think.
Gerald Horn returns to Toronto on Saturday, September 9th. Horn will present a different perspective on the movies at a different book list as part of Saturday Morning Live. He will discuss his latest book, The Final Victim of the Blacklist, John Howard Lawson, Dean of the Hollywood Ten. Lawson was one of the most brilliant, successful, and intellectual screenwriters in Hollywood during the 1930s and 40s. Horn will discuss how McCarthyism and anti-Semitism ruined Lawson's career. He will also discuss Lawson's role in writing the screenplay for the anti-apartheid film Cry the Beloved Country, starring Sidney Poitier and Canada Lee, and the progressive tradition in cinema that Lawson represented. Come to a different book list, 746 Bathurst Street on Saturday, September 9th at 10 a.m. This event will be carried live to air during Saturday Morning Live on the station with a different perspective, CKLN 88.1 FM.
And now back to June 28th, 1990, on CKLN with Bob Dobbs, Mike Dyer, Kent Perry, and others.
Okay, so here's a call from PBS to Bob, confirming Bob.
Psychotronic.
Michael Levine's 25-year career has taken him deep into the bowels of the drug world. As a highly praised undercover agent for the Drug Enforcement Agency, Levine has posed as a heroin smuggler in Thailand, a cocaine buyer in Buenos Aires, and a gun runner in Buffalo. Before his retirement in December, Levine specialized in South and Central America, where he is known as El Tiburon, the shark. The 50-year-old agent turned author after his retirement in December. His book, Deep Cover, is billed as the inside story of how DEA infighting, incompetence, and subterfuge lost us the biggest battle of the drug war. Mr. Levine, thank you for joining us. The Colombian drug barons have said they were going to step up their war against the politicians and the industrial leaders. What is your take on that situation? I mean, why is it so out of control?
Well, my take on the whole Colombian situation is it's being presented to America in a very fraudulent manner. The American public is being told that there is a war against drugs in Colombia, when in fact what it is a war against violent drug dealers. President Bahilio Barco of Colombia is much too smart to go to war against drugs because the sale of cocaine is more than 50% of his country's income. The proof of it, I think, is in, and you hear it when Commissioner of Customs Van Raab resigned from his post angrily, and he wrote to President Bush, third world banking schemes are more important than winning a drug war. Now,
what that means is
the Andean nations that sell all the cocaine in the world have a combined international debt of $42 billion, of which most of that payment, the interest payments, come from the sale of cocaine. So you've got a very powerful faction, the bankers of this world, particularly the bankers of the United States, who really don't want to win a drug war. In Deep Cover, one of the purposes of writing Deep Cover and covering this case, Operation Trifecta, was to capture in microcosm what a total fraud this drug war is from bottom to top.
Well, where is the U.S. culpable here?
I had a brother who was a heroin addict for 19 years. He killed himself in 1977, writing a letter, "My family and friends, I'm sorry, I can't stand the drugs anymore." He'd been through 5 rehabilitation programs. I was transferred a year later to South America. I'd become an undercover expert. I was teaching undercover to other agencies and other professional lawmen. I did what I was trained to do. When I got to South America, I started working my way upward through cocaine cartels until I reached the top. When I reached the top, what I found was that the top drug dealers in this world have better protection with our CIA, our Pentagon, our politicians, our special interests than any DEA agent in the world.
What do you mean by that? You mean our government is in collusion with them actively? Or?
Absolutely. And very, very actively so. What I'm saying is I'm going to give you enough real facts that if our elected officials are really interested in getting to the truth about this drug war, whether we're really in it for real, or whether the whole thing is really a sham and a smoke and mirror show, I have given them more than enough in this book to start calling these people forward and questioning them as to the statements they made and the acts that I described as to whether they really did it or they didn't, and if they did, why we gave up the drug war in favor of a war against communism. In fact, we made a conscious choice that the hell with the children, the people of the United States, we're at war against communism. Well, now it's become a lot more sinister than that. Now you have events like the one captured in Vanity Fair, where a man named Molina Osorio comes into Texas, sells 2 kilos of cocaine to an undercover DEA agent. In a closed-door hearing, the CIA manages to get him removed from the American judicial system. The minutes of whatever happened are a secret. The investigative reporter follows it up. He finds out that the DEA agent in Honduras had documented 50 tons of cocaine a year coming into the U.S. at the hands of U.S.-supported Contras and Honduran military. And what does DEA do? They transfer the agent out of Honduras to get him out of the hair of the Pentagon. Now, what's happening is, using the same logic that we're at war against drugs, we invade Panama, 23 Americans die, from 400 to 6,000 innocent Panamanians die for the arrest of one drug dealer, yet in Honduras, they are given a license to peddle cocaine to the United States, and that's a fraud and that's a sham.
When I interviewed the head of the DEA, John Lawn, who at the point of his retirement...
Yeah, that's where the interview gets pink, and they deal with this other guy, and they bring on 2 other men who, kind of knock this guy down. Mike, you ready, Mike? Yeah. Mike, Mike said to me as he heard this, as he started to hear this, so Mike now has shifted over to Kent's position. Kent has become guest. We've done a tetrad on the fourth year. We flipped the fourth year process pattern already. Mike, I'm not sure if he really liked being... he liked it. But no, you would have stayed here if Kent hadn't requested to come over here.
Yeah.
Request.
So all production kudos go to Mike from this point on, right?
Oh, all right, sure. You'll see an increase in the...
Yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. Use me now.
So that interview was April 23rd, 1990, McNeil Lehrer. That's a major thing. And Mike says to me as he's listening, he says, This guy's dead. Now, that's a good point, Mike, because if he doesn't get killed, then he obviously represents a faction and he's protected. I mean, Skolnick said he would never go on to a national program, NBC, CBS, I don't know about PBS, but anything national like that. He wouldn't go in any of their studios unless he was in a tank. So a character like this can get on and do this. And his new book, Deep Cover, I've seen it over at Leichmann's at the Atrium on the Bay, if you want to get it. But it's interesting that this guy comes out and exposes the Pentagon. This could relate to the Trump matter. But we got a call?
Yes, we do. Hello, CKLM. Hello?
It's a quiet caller again.
They probably don't know the rules, you know, the rules about
turning up their radio.
Having to listen to the radio.
No, I think that person's consciously doing it. They did it twice last week.
No big deal. Let's try it again.
Yeah.
Hello? We've got another caller. Hello? Hi, CKLM.
Hello?
Hi.
Hi, this idea of the woman's corner, it sort of has an aura to it. Like maybe you could kind of get an Ann Landers column in there, and maybe you put the astrology in there, and, you know, paper doily ideas for the picnic. I think it's a wonderful idea. It would look good in the Globe and Mail in 1951. I think it's an excellent idea, the woman's corner.
But, wait. Are you knocking the idea? There's a cynical tone
in
your voice.
Well, as a woman, I mean, in the last 20 years, I mean, I'm speaking you man to woman, Bob. After the last 20 years of ghettoization of women's interests, you know, that rhubarb recipe, it made my mouth water hearing about it. But the context, I mean, you know, a one-time leader of the Ontario NDP lost his office because he was holding up jars of jam on the NDP commercials on TV, and it looked like ghettoization to the more militant women NDP members. So, but maybe you may think about it that the women's section does have Ann Landers, who helps people with problems. And,
but Ed, I would suggest this for quick pattern recognition, that we don't have to have a goal or a program or ideological situation as women anymore. The changes have come and gone. Now we can replay all past. So I think that caller was a true subgenius woman because she had no fear to present that part of woman's history, woman's experience, as a replay. You know, we can do anything now. We don't have to be geared towards somebody's program anymore. You can be any kind of fool you want to be from any point in history.
So it truly is, we're back to post-feminism, post-industrialism.
Post-cyberpunk, post-postmodern, post-Bob even. Even post-Bob.
Post-Bob.
I think we better let Eddie go on that one. Did you hear the way he said post-Bob?
I think there's a stunned silence. Yes.
Way to go, Eddie.
This woman's corner, I think maybe that could be the theme, not tonight necessarily, but people could accumulate recipes and ideas and share them with us as we go along. So but it's hit a tone, I think.
Yeah, I think, the tone is it allowed Eddie to understand a new level of Bob that he never experienced before, that we're not living in the 1980s or 90s or 60s, 70s. Bob is all times. All subgeniuses are all times. We can be any culture, any pink phase we want to be, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could even be what? You could be a coal miner's daughter if you want to, right?
And going back to that caller who was concerned about your life.
Yeah, the paranoid.
Yes, yeah. And wasn't it Bob who once said, give me slack or kill me?
Yeah.
And I think that sums it up.
And this person probably doesn't know my history. I infiltrated the most dangerous areas of secret government activity from the middle of World War II, it's frightening to say it, the middle of World War II until the 1670s when I got the higher echelons where I had my own army protecting me. But I went through you know, incredible paranoid situations and dangerous situations. You know, makes James Bond look like Mike Dyer's life, you know, and Kent's life, and our new guest here, Charlie, you know, friend of Jerry Belanger. Any of you pinks around me, you know, it makes James Bond look like your lives. But what I went through, as a matter of fact, I've died so many times in the Tim Leary metaphorical mode, you know, many ego deaths and many resurrections. So I can't remember what death is. And I certainly am assuming I'm already dead and in heaven now. And Mike, I have to say, you help it happen. You help me feel I am in heaven now. I'm in heaven, so I died a long time ago.
Well, there aren't any calls right now. Kent, do you have a comment?
Kent has a topic, I think.
Yeah, Donald Trump. I'm just a little curious here as to what you did with his money.
Well, it goes back to the thesis that Gorbachev and the Rockefeller faction designed by Bush are out to get the Bolsheviks and kick them out of North America. And this has been going on for several years now. And the Bolshevik grouping is reorganizing in Germany and reunifying Germany and setting up the Holy Roman Empire. Therefore, the heavy Bolshevik network headquartered in Toronto, as exposed by Robert O'Driscoll in his poem NATO and the Warsaw Pact Are One. He points out that the beast, the Catholic beast, the Vatican beast, the Holy Roman Empire beast, is centered around five families in Canada. Well, that's the Bolshevik control that's traditionally been through Canada. And you have this surfacing really strongly with the collapse of the Campo Empire. Mm-hmm. Now, Campo goes down, that affects the Reichmans, and Donald Trump is affected by that because he was a figure, he was the businessman, a celebrity, when you had the hot media doing a Baroque spiral through the 80s as a retrieval versus the cool media spiral, Baroque spiral in the 60s. Donald Trump is pointed out in Spy magazine using Skolnick's information. Did you read the whole Spy article? Remember, Skolnick says that Trump is a Rockefeller man.
Yes.
Now, it's true that Trump got his first loan from Chase Manhattan back in the 70s, a long time ago. But that's when the Rockefellers controlled Chase Manhattan. But if you know Dr. Beter's information...
Is this, now, the Chase Manhattan Bank is now in... they're restructuring to... get away from filing under Chapter 11.
Yeah. You see, there's all kinds of changes going on in Chase Manhattan. It was Rockefeller-controlled up till the late 70s. Then when the Bolsheviks were kicked out of Russia, that part of it, and they knocked off the Rockefellers in 79, they took over the Chase Manhattan thing, and they got Volcker to raise the interest rates to plunder the Rockefeller Empire. So you had a lot of the Rockefeller-controlled entities, like Trump, working for the Bolsheviks, probably murdered and replaced by doubles or robotoids. So we don't even know if Trump is the original Trump. And it's interesting that his wife, who could be an intelligence control agent, leaves just when the plug is being pulled on him, right? So, but what this Bolshevik gang is now having to deal with the Rockefeller-Russian alliance, the Russian Skopsy-Gorby faction, so that the Bolsheviks, they still control the Pentagon, they run the dope incorporated situation there, but they're being exposed by this guy. Now, Mike, you said that Michael Levine's dead. He's a dead... Did we already mention that?
Yeah.
Mike said that this Michael Levine, just heard on PBS, he's dead. You know, that guy's going to be off. Well, if he doesn't die, then he's protected, and he represents a faction, probably the Rockefeller faction, the Bush-Gorbian thing, giving him good coverage, good publication of stuff that Mae Brussels and LaRouche and everybody exposed years ago. Now it comes out in official pink press. If he stays alive, then he's protected, and it's an attempt to put the burden of public scrutiny on the Pentagon. Now you notice George Bush more and more cuts the Pentagon budget. So Trump is weakened. The Bolsheviks are weakened. They retrench in Europe, and that's why they had to reunite Europe and reunite the East and Western Bloc, and they're going to bring back the Habsburg Holy Roman Empire. So I think that answers your question. Trump was Rockefeller. He then was Bolshevik-controlled in the 80s, and now he has to get out of America. But he will be able to limp along a little bit. But just by telling what's happening to Trump via the major media, that ruins his media credibility. That ruins his... you can be killed instantly in the media in that sense, right? His credit rating goes down. Everybody will back off. As a matter of fact, the media, the major media news, is like code for who to stay away from and who to join up with.
We do have a call, okay. Bob. You are listening to CKLN, the Church of the Subgenia Show. Hello.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hello. Are we going to have a Messiah?
I think you're on the greatest hits tape. You asked about, didn't you originally call in and say, Bob's religion, this church could not take it because we don't have a pink mass media form of bias?
No, I'm being confused with
that. All right, you sound very much like that person. No. All right, well, are we going to have a Messiah?
Well, the word is this being named Maitreya. Have you heard
of him? Yeah. What's his name? Benjamin Creams.
Benjamin Creams travels around, yeah.
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 You want to comment on that?
Well, the last I heard was that... he's planning on coming out after the Tokyo stock market goes. And he has been spending the last 10 years talking to media people and doing whatever miracle they need to see, and he's waiting for the day. So.
Yeah, now I think the symbolism... You still there, caller?
Yeah.
The symbolism of the Tokyo stock market going is that the Tokyo Sony originally was a Rockefeller operation. Many subgenius know the fact that Sony stood for Standard Oil of New York. You know, one of Rockefeller's earlier companies back in the early part of the 20th century. So Sony was Rockefeller-controlled from under solar government conditions from 1945 on, the whole Japanese enterprise. Now, the Bolsheviks took over the Rockefeller situation. They started to militarize Japan in the 80s. So Japan is Rockefeller-controlled, but in the 80s, Bolshevik-controlled. And then we have the weakening of Bolsheviks as they're forced to retrench into Europe, and that's why you're having trouble in Japan the past year or two as a result of what's going on in Europe. All right. So, yes. Now, yes, Tokyo goes down. All right. Stock market goes.
Okay, it does.
Then you bring on the Holy Roman Empire Antichrist, the Messiah, which will be an Antichrist. It'll be an anti-Bob. And that'll come out of Europe.
He's living in London.
Yeah, it'll be a European operation. There's every faction is in London. That's why you have the Queen fighting Margaret Thatcher.
So why is it a conflict between, what you describe as Bob?
A conflict with Bob?
Yeah.
Because Bob is post-Antichrist and post-Christ.
Mike laughs at that.
We don't know if Mike's paying attention. But
he just broke the microphone. So
Mike's having his own conflict.
No, I'm laughing at that.
Oh, yeah.
Post-Antichrist.
I have no idea why you would laugh at that, Mike. I mean, you are a convert to my ways. Yeah, I think you would understand
that.
Yeah, okay. So,
well, this guy's supposed to be an enlightened being. I mean, how could you be against that?
Who's the Antichrist, an enlightened being?
No, well, this is Maitreya character. Yeah.
No, come on.
He's not.
You know why he's not going to be enlightened? First of all, he's going to be in human form.
Well, he does that by choice. He's not on the karmic wheel. He just comes down once every age, right?
Well, have you heard my dogma about the discarnate state and the electric coming, the electric second coming under electric conditions?
No.
Yeah. What do you think, Mike? We've been talking about it for 3 years. How could we give this? That's true. Yeah, you've only started listening the last month.
Three shows. Yeah.
A summary, then.
All right. Mike, could you give me a hand here? How could we explain that the electric coming, the electric second coming, the Finnegan awake situation is post any anthropomorphic cultural or advertisement for a human figure?
Yeah, but don't you think this guy comes on the news? I mean, apparently he's already been interviewed by CNN, but they didn't play it. He comes on all the stations. What's going to go down? I mean, how's that going to affect what you're describing?
Okay, what I'm describing is the form of Christ and the Antichrist together, which we call tactility, and it has no content. The human image of Maitreya, who there's going to be all kinds of antichrists and false Christs and false Bobs, and they'll be anthropomorphic and human focused, so that you will have someone to look at. With Bob, you can't look at him; you can just feel it, and that's why he chose the radio medium, so you wouldn't be able to visualize Bob. Any visualization will be a failure because you can't focus and have a centralized image under electric, discarnate, decentralized, multi-consciousness situation.
Yeah, but form is emptiness; they're one and the same.
No.
Sure.
Do you mean by emptiness a resonating, vibrating, pulsating, systole, diastole, like a heart situation?
I'm just saying the Buddhist dogma that whatever manifests because there's an unmanifested part to begin with.
Most people think of the unmanifested part as an empty void, and that's a product of visual space. Now, Buddhism.
Yeah, that's not true, right?
No, it's not true. Buddhism, Christianity, Islam, they all come out of the manuscript tradition, which is based on writing. There's a difference between the Western written tradition and the ideogrammic Eastern written tradition, but they're both writing, therefore emphasizing the eye, therefore abstracting out of the tactile condition, and therefore creating a void and form, emptiness, form, dialectic, which has been well bypassed by the interpenetrating effect of the electric environment. So we can't cite the Buddhists, the Christians, the Judaic tradition, or Islam, Sikh, whatever.
Yeah, but the consciousness that they're describing is interpenetrating.
That's right, but their means of describing it is verbal, written, or gesture.
All of them limited.
No, you want to get the new dogma. All of those forms of communication and styles are not electrically tactile. You can only get the effect of the new second coming by resonating under the electric church. Not the industrial church, as Stang calls it, the electric church. The electrification of you on the phone with me, sharing the same space, interpenetrating, resonating, using verbality to jam with, is the only way you can express the true second coming, which has happened.
That's how someone gets enlightened, is a direct mind-to-mind transmission from the guru.
Yeah, right. Not a from. It's a interplay. We don't know which is the guru in this conversation, you or me.
Right.
And also, it's not mind-to-mind. That's a body reference point. We are beyond our minds and beyond our... any part of your physical or psychic apparatus. We are something, we are communicating now in the same resonating spot. We do not have identity. You are as much me as I am as you.
Yeah, and whatever blocks I'm experiencing are also manifest in my body.
Yeah, and healthy.
You can't knock the body, though. That's ridiculous.
We're not knocking it. We're just talking about where the body went. And I do advocate a media fast to bring back the body. And that's why the Maitreya and these guys will communicate on the media, being content, and won't know that they have to communicate around the electric environment. And the only way to do that is to turn it off. So my platform, bypasses anything in the Book of Revelations. This has never been done or thought of before.
Right.
Turn off the electric environment, only temporarily, so that we can fall asleep again and be human.
What does that mean exactly?
I'll say it again, so that we can fall asleep and be human. In other words, if we turn off the electric environment then we wouldn't be extended in a discarnate situation. Therefore, we'd be back in our bodies. We would not be in this new nature. We'd be in what we call the old nature.
Having absorbed all the
having the had the experience. We could have the meaning by turning off the electric environment.
Now, I'm not sure what that all arrives to, but that's okay.
Well, what you do is, it is okay, but what you do is that we then realize where we were, what we experienced, and then when we've turned it off, we then, having realized that, turn it back on. Only at appropriate times and as a form of celebration. In other words, we can collectively, now this is where we collectively have ESP, mm-hmm. a complex clairvoyance where we all decide at the right time to turn on the electric environment and share it for a certain span of time.
That could be 2012.
Yeah. Did you leave that message?
Yep.
Ah, okay.
That was. Yep. What do you think of my idea that you brought up Zappa, and that's 22 years from now?
Yeah, and his birthday's that day. I had no idea of that either.
Oh, so I thought someone pointed that out, but no.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, his birthday is that day.
That's great.
So he'll be 72.
He'll be 72.
Yeah, he was born in 1940, so he'll be 72. What is that? That's 236s. That's 3 and 6 is 9. That's 2 9s. That could be why Gretzky moved to Los Angeles, right, to be near Frank. The 2 9 thing. Yeah, that's pattern recognition.
But Mike.
Yes.
Did you hear that Beefheart cover band?
No. You're kidding.
That was me. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
No, didn't hear it.
What do you
mean? I put it in your file.
Oh, that's what that is.
Yeah, yeah.
Jeez. You got to leave a note or something, you know?
I left the note at the beginning, like, verbally.
Yeah, yeah. Well, no, then I haven't heard it at all. Because I saw it. I honestly thought it was a mistake. I thought someone put it in the wrong file.
Oh, no. Okay. That was for you.
Now I will listen to it in full.
Okay.
Thanks.
Mike, did you hear this caller's message about Beefheart being Secretary of State under Zappa conditions?
No,
I missed that one.
Well, the reception in the van wasn't that great. So
yeah,
that
was a clever message. He was relating the harmonic Bob Vergence to... did you leave a message... did you call in last show about...
Arguez.
Yeah. No, Arguez was the one credited with the harmonic Bob Vergence.
Yeah.
Yeah, you...
But
you,
I was
you
down there at the time, and there were people saying he was... That was an immediate thing for him. That he didn't originally discover the mind thing. Somebody else did.
No, that was sort of known by scholars.
Yeah,
but he's the one who promoted it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
As well as Earth Day.
But apparently he was doing a bit of coke, little grandiose visions there.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had a rough time. Then his son actually died in a car accident.
Will you ever read after the Bob Vergence?
Just after, yeah.
Ooh.
And then that's why he wrote The Surfers of his next book, whatever that was.
Yeah. The William Irwin Thompson puts down both LaRouche and Arguez. If you want to check out his new book, The Imaginary Landscape, maybe William Irwin Thompson can explain why he got the bad karma. Arguez got the bad karma or good karma, you know, depending on where you are, of his son dying. But check out William Irwin Thompson's little run-through on put-down of Arguez, even though Thompson is a heavy propagandist for the Gnostic Aquarian conspiracy. Why would he distinguish himself from Arguez? That's interesting. I think it's basically because it focuses on a time zone, on a particular date, and that's really not electric sensibility. And Thompson was well influenced by McLuhan, but he doesn't fully acknowledge it in the way he should. He does it in passing, while knocking McLuhan too. But it's you can read William Irwin Thompson to see the real meaning of McLuhan, and then you can drop Thompson and go to McLuhan, because McLuhan is the prophet of the electric second coming. He was, you know, he's like one of the John the Baptist for Bob. I don't know. You're a Canadian.
Whatever's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. On we go.
Night.
Thanks.
That's interesting because I've always had this real fascination with the phenomena of tribute or cover bands.
Oh, yeah?
There's this this great wide scope of tribute bands who play up at, you know, the Gasworks and at festivals all across Canada, and they're hugely popular. And so to hear that there's a Catherine Beefheart. Yeah, and I apologize, but this tape was just left in my folder, and I just saw this sort of listing of songs, and I recognized some of the titles, and I thought, well, this must be a mistake. I was going to return it.
And then, how would you return it? Where would you put it?
Well, I mean, just bring it in and say, look, David...
oh, I see.
This
wrong place.
Mistake.
Yeah.
So I'll go back and look.
You know what we're going to say, but it's interesting that you just aren't connected to Beefheart because you couldn't hear that message. You got static coming on your car, see? It's
went over a bump or something.
Yeah, and because Mike wasn't ready to hear that. Okay.
Well, you mentioned practicing in the media ecology. If you turn off the media or the medium,
the electric medium.
Does it still not, can you ever sever yourself totally? I mean, does it still not resonate within your body, even though it's turned off or you're avoiding it or you're practicing that form of ecology?
It resonates in memory. Mm-hmm. It's like waking up from a dream. See, that's how we'd wake up, because we would be able to get out of the form of living in it, and therefore we'd have the experience and the meaning. The meaning is a way of replaying it in memory or a detached state. We can't get detached from it. Now, if we can't turn off the electric environment, we could turn off television, therefore changing the particular effect of TV, turn off computers, but we could keep radio on. And radio could be the electric implosion, but have a different sensibility. But I don't think that would accomplish the total turn-off. So when we are fully comfortable with death, when we collectively are comfortable with death, we will allow ourselves to be amputated consciously by turning off the electric environment. This will be discussed in the world government forums and parliaments, right? And they'll have a referendum on it. And the results of the referendum will not be published by numerical form, like 90% say yes, 10% say no. You will not hear the results, and you'll know the yes vote won, because the electric environment will be turned off. That will be the product of the vote.
Mm-hmm.
Matter of fact, we could merge the computers so that they would be susceptible to a vote like that and automatically shut off the whole electric environment, which the beast will do and implode into a computerized one big beast kind of computer. Will control the whole satellite, mixed media, TV, radio environment. Then, if a computer receives the instruction to turn off, it'll be turned off. But then we put a Bob failsafe thing in to turn it back on at a certain point. So that is the most amazing art event that would ever happen. It would make Picasso, Marcel Duchamp, John Cage, Shockabilly, Leonardo da Vinci, everybody look pretty puny compared to that. Mm-hmm. It'd be a collective clairvoyance and a collective shared experience.
Now, I came in late tonight. Were there any other tapes that I should be lining up to play other than the theme outro?
We get
Hairspray.
That'll be the hymn, and I don't think there's any others.
Okay.
There's just that and the Sting. So where we no calls?
Not right now. We could throw out the phone number again. It's 595-1478. You're listening to CKLN 88.1. We have, what do we have in terms of CKLN events coming up? We've got our annual street crawl.
Yeah. Pub crawl?
Coming up, yeah. To raise more money for something, and that's coming up July 12th. Oh. And we also have that week, and I mention this only because I don't think I'm going to be here, Real Canadian Week, and we're going to have some very special guests that night.
That's right.
So maybe I could talk to Ken about that.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to be out of the city.
You don't think you can make
that
it back?
Day. No, I don't think so. Okay. I'm going to try.
Yeah.
I'll talk to you about that later. And we're looking for a new news director. So.
Oh, didn't we? We got one.
They're still advertising.
They quit?
So.
The new one quit?
Yep.
Oh, okay. Take the call, Mike, but one thing about that Michael Levine guy, you say he's going to be off. That's the furry lint syndrome. That happened to Larry Flint. I mean, these furry lints, like false prophets or whatever they want to experience, surface as popular art forms. But the highbrow art form is the ultimate furry lint, me, who can handle the effects.
Ah.
Mike just removed. Oh, did it hit you there?
Okay, let's go to the call. Hello,
assassination attempt on Kent there.
Hi, you're on the air.
Sorry, Kent.
That's better. Right?
Hello.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. Hi. How you doing, Mike?
Good.
Scott. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Scott.
Hi, Kent.
Hey, Scott.
Thanks for your messages, Scott. Excellent messages.
Yeah, did you catch the last part of that Robert Ashley, though?
Well, that was last
the alien
show.
Part? I really don't know because I'm not listening to it. I was playing it back on cheap shit.
You mean, oops, no, we played Robert Ashley. How do you spell it?
Ashley.
A-S-H-T?
A-S-H-L-E-Y.
All right. Do you know his work, Mike? Robert Ashley?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, Ashley, we played that 2 weeks ago, right?
No, you played it tonight, too. Willard, if you don't turn that TV on, I'm going to...
Oh, that's from Ashley, too. Yeah, that's a great...
I have a video of his, but I transferred it on cheap equipment back and shot it at you.
Are you in Burlington now?
No, I'm just kind of wandering.
Okay. Are you really homeless?
Well, relatively speaking.
Are you looking for a place to crash? Is that why you're...
That's not what I called about.
Okay.
I read half of Mechanical Bride today.
Half of it. Ooh, so what happened?
Well, it was great. A great experience. It seemed to me that I understand you more and more, you know?
Yeah.
It seemed to me that almost like you were hoiking up references to Mechanical Bride for my benefit as I was listening earlier tonight.
That's right, that happens. What? Yeah. You see, Bob is a collective mixture of archetypes, and I'm not here to confuse people. It sounds confusing if you don't do your homework, but once you get into your homework, then you realize Bob is just replaying the major 10 holy offices, right? So you resonate with the holy office by doing your homework, then you resonate with Bob, and then you learn every 2 weeks, you make new insights, and you identify what you think is being addressed to you.
Yeah, well, speaking of not doing your homework, were you holding back on me on the Grateful Dead, huh?
When?
When I asked you about the Grateful Dead, I asked you for a convenient little nutshell-type explanation, but since I've been reading Meyer LaRouche, I realized that they might be part of MKUltra.
Yeah. But I thought I explained. You mean you called in a couple months ago on that?
Yeah, or
I explained the Grateful Dead.
Maybe it was one of my personal massages, not on the show.
Oh, I didn't do it on the. I did it to you personally, or I ignored it personally.
Ignored it personally.
Yeah, I have talked about it. The Grateful Dead, you know, as a phrase, it refers to the planet of the dead, the electric effect, and that's why psychic TV. Now you notice the phrase psychic TV. They're referring to the 19th century matching phenomenon of ESP, where a psychic thing is where two people are synchronistic, all right, or more. That's to call TV psychic is erroneous. TV is a complex clairvoyance. It's multi-leveled psychism, and it deals with the media archetypes themselves and the psychic relationships between them that are contained by the television form, all previous technological environments, and the way they interact via advertising and ratings is an ESP relationship where they anticipate each other. It's called anticipatory democracy. Whereas Grateful Dead promoted participatory democracy, a rearview mirror image in the 60s. The whole counterculture was a rearview mirror anesthetic to fail to understand anticipatory democracy, which was carried out by the media archetypes themselves. All right. So Grateful Dead is a playful term recognizing subliminally the electric effect, the electric second coming, but the medium they use and the style of verbal interview they gave failed to have any staying power. Therefore, they died, too, as a phenomenon.
You know, the Pinks had me half worried about, half guilty about turning off so much until I started jamming with you again a couple months ago.
What had you turned off from?
Wow, I've turned off from TV, I've turned off from radio. I feel like a misanthropic sometimes. But I got to refer back to the jam recipe, and that any males that are listening should definitely, definitely meditate upon the jam recipe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the one that was given.
Yeah.
The
universal theme, all expressed quite poetically.
The rhubarb.
Yeah.
You've realized that dropping off is not antisocial, because you're actually communicating with the electric second coming more strongly by not being involved in the appendage other archetypal forms.
Well, I'm taking one last, vast, desperate leap at that telekinetic space, I guess.
Yeah, tell it to feel it. You're already inside it, so you're learning how to swim in it. You're also learning to drop off the green fascist movement.
Thanks, Bob. Yeah, recognize who's calling, huh?
Yeah, the eco-fascist movement. I know who you are, Scott. And the only way to bypass the eco-fascist movement is read LaRouche, which I think you were genuine in your message 2 weeks ago where you said you realized by reading LaRouche, which is the power of any holy office, it questions everything you ever thought you knew.
Sure enough.
It makes you question. Did you recover from that?
Sort of recovered from it. Like I said, I read half of Mechanical Bride today. I haven't jammed on LaRouche again. But,
well, see, you can look at LaRouche through Mechanical Bride, or you can look at McLuhan through LaRouche, or you can look at Mae Brussel through Dr. Beter. So you use these things as filters to look at each other. And when you get adept at jamming with all 10 holy offices and looking at them as x-rays of each other, then you got slack.
Great. I heard my first zap in many years ago, just a while ago, too.
What was that?
Well, I heard Flakes again.
Yeah.
That was great. And Broken Hearts are for, you know.
It had new meaning for you.
Sure did.
Yeah, he's pure acoustic artist, buddy. He gives you, his rhythms are there to give release for those involved in meditating in the holy offices. His music does give you that release. There's no doubt about it. He's like the John the Baptist for the weekend bash at Club 22. You know what I mean? He's the prophet. His musical rhythms.
He's my saint.
Yeah, he's the musical saint for the band at the party at Dobbstown.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because after they've spent a week of working in all the holy offices, the subgenii need that release. And Frank can do it live. You may not get it on his record, but you go to his concert live. I had Filbert over. And she watched a videotape of the 1988 stuff that Frank did on his tour, including the Beatles stuff, which the Beatles won't let him release. That stuff, Philbert was just blown away by. She could feel it just by video. Now, if you experience Frank live,
you'll
cancel your canned accounts with Grant. You won't talk to the fast worms. You won't talk to anybody anymore. You'll say, give me Frank, and you'll say, where is he next?
Great. As long as I'm still yapping, I might as well put in my fanatical review of Remedies When You Can't Reach a Doctor.
Oh, yeah, you got the book?
Yeah.
Tell the woman.
I got it at Ben Abrahams. It's great. Oh, and I also wanted to mention that the O'Driscoll book is also available at the Longhouse, the Canada content bookstore in Blair.
Oh, good. Yeah, the Nathan Warsaw Packer 1. I'm really glad. See, Scott's the guy who gave me the interview. That's a really important interview that O'Driscoll gave. We've got to get the part one.
Anyways, yeah, sure.
Now, you're saying you were going to come back and buy Connie's book for me, but you got it at Ben Abrams' bookstore.
Yeah.
Yeah, and The Woman's Corner, if that woman's still listening, that's the book that Connie did, and what would you tell her about the book?
Well, I guess I had some sort of prejudice against homeopathy, or I guess I'm still learning about healing and womanly art, but it seems to me that book resonates.
And it's compact, it's dense, don't you think? It's got so much stuff in it?
Yeah.
Yeah, why would you have something against homeopathy? How would you even know to have an opinion?
Well, because I'm more into, like, Stanley Burroughs and master cleansers and things like that.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, you specialize in certain parts of your organs.
I guess.
Certain kinds of enemas.
Remedying.
Yeah. No, that's the thing about Connie's book, it has every remedy.
Great.
And homeopathy will appear to be a major remedy in it if you don't know that remedy.
Yeah, and by the way, thanks, Mike, for saving me from oblivion, because you were the first to give out the number tonight.
Oh, okay. Sometimes I take it for granted sometimes. You know.
Okay, thanks kindly.
Nice, Scott.
Thanks for the messages, Scott.
Ooh.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah. Always good input
from Scott. I do apologize for not giving out the phone number earlier.
That's okay. I mean, you were thrown into a position, Kent, where you had to just suddenly take over. You haven't done this for a long time, so I just do this now with my eyes closed. But I'm thinking while I'm doing it, my eyes closed.
About other things.
The Jams made a big impression tonight, Bob, and I keep thinking about it myself. I would just like to say also that, to mention again that we do have rhubarb. We have more rhubarb than we can use, and we'll make it available to any listeners who are interested. And we've stewed it up, in fact, with some strawberries, some organic strawberries and rhubarb from the garden. And you just stew it up, and you put it on your granola, and it's just great. A little yogurt.
You've got it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Rhubarb, okay.
We froze it.
More than I can use.
It seems to be a subgenius vegetable.
It is, I think, and for a lot of reasons.
So this was really important that this woman called on this show and offered this and set up a new situation for us.
Well, we've probably got time for maybe one more call, unless you had something else you wanted to say. We could wrap it up.
We're not going to get calls from Sean or David anymore for a while. They're away. And maybe Jim Patterson could give us a call and give us some creativity. I don't know if Jim listens anymore, but he did a very good tape, which gets great reviews around the world. I mean, that tape he put together, Bob's third album, people really respond to that, so Jim gets a lot of credit for that. So maybe Jim, if he's still up, I mean, he likes to be a woman and not participate, right? But maybe he could contribute some of his new collages. Otherwise,
you got the theme music all queued up.
All right. What time is it?
It's 10 to 2.
Ooh, gee, we've gone over the hour and a half thing.
That's okay. I mean, I just took into account that I was late tonight. And
find yourself. Find yourself 20 minutes. Well, thanks. Just that LaRouche is going to be on in 15 or 20 minutes, right? And Skolnick at 15. About 10 after 2?
Shortly after. Shortly about 5 after. Right directly after
Skolnick.
All
right.
Gotta take care of a couple of those PSA and promo things and
right now I want to tell Jerry Belanger talked about what's Bob going to do about the psychic or the satanic fascination of psychic TV. I'll promise to do deal with that next show. That should be dealt with. How could Bob get these guys out of that Gnostic fascination, the 23 fascination? Robert Anton Wilson. Yeah, it's a big task because they think they're in resonance with Bob. I mean, many of my followers go for that stuff and they think Bob does too. But I don't want to alienate them, but I've got to subtly communicate to them something else, right? So no calls? Okay, that's it.
Thank you, Bob. Sorry. Apologize for lateness.
But it was fun having you right beside me.
And I'll sure try to make it back on the 11th, because that sounds like it's going to be a really good show.
Right, Connie flew back from Ontario. Ontario, flew back from Montreal. Uh-huh. And she says you go from those islands.
From the island, yeah.
Is fun.
Well, I'm actually working that evening around supper time, and it might go, say, a few hours. And if it does, then I'll split.
You could get a 10 o'clock flight. What's it take, a half hour?
Yeah, about 45 minutes.
Yeah, you can do it. So I hope you can get back. Well, we'll pretend you're not coming back to back it up. Maybe we'll get Doug down, too, as well as Kent.
Sure, but I'll sure try to make it, especially if Jerry is coming up.
Yeah, the new Jerry. The new Jerry. Let's take this call, baby.
Final call. Hello.
You're rather big. Oh, my God, have you ever...
Looks like Jerry.
That was good. Okay, this Tai Chi hymn yoga church chorus thing is a message from the Quebec Sub-Genii, who were protesting wildly since June 22nd, or celebrating wildly the effect of Bob's program to break up Canada and get ready for a monarchy here in Canada with me as king. This song expresses what the Quebecois Sub-Genius feels towards the English pink.
Okay. See you in 2 weeks, I hope.
Okay, Mike.
Remember to skim the foam off the top of the jam.
Thanks.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
I move your picture from my wall, and I replace them, both large and small, and each new day.
Welcome.
Hey, Mike.
Bob, are you there? Bob, is that you?
I can hear you, Mike.
Bob, can you hear me? I can hear you.
You know what, Mike? You hear that song?
I hear it.
I remember when you had the show from 87 to 88 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
When you moved to the night and I was off for 2 months, that was my goodbye song to you, the one we're hearing right now.
I remember.
You remember that?
When it's all said and done, and oh, my darling,
do you remember that, Mike?
It was an emotional moment.
Yes, I was telling you. I was saying goodbye. I see your picture, Mike.
That was it.
Anyway, so that's the kind of synchrony that we always had on our show.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't plan that. Greg found the tape. He played it. And then on come you, and I'm listening to the music of that June 28th, 90 show, and I said, that's the one we ended in, would have been April 1988.
Yeah, yeah. So where are you now? What are you doing? Can you tell me?
Let me say this. I live in New York City.
Yeah.
I heard that you were in the Witness Protection Program. When you were on a year ago celebrating International Connection, I did not know that you were still in the Witness Protection Program. And I was wondering, why are you still in it? And I never was sure why you were forced into it. Was it because that they punished you for being connected with me? Or were you afraid of me? Why are you in this situation?
Are we on the air right now? We're on the air, right? I can't. I mean, there's some things I just can't say over the air. You and I can talk privately later, or maybe by email if I can get your email address, but there's some things I can't talk about. I think I'm kind of like the soldier in World War II, you know, in Japan, who was stuck in the jungle, didn't know the war was over, and I'm still that person. I have no idea what's going on. I'm cut off from all sources of media. I work on a farm. I live with my family, a very quiet existence in a rural part of Ontario. I do live in Ontario still. And I raise exotic livestock, and we homeschool our children, and we just don't go out anywhere. So I really have no contact with the outside world at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
Greg, can you fade the music down a little bit? It's a little hard to hear Mike. Okay, Mike.
Bob.
I got most of what you said. What I wanted to say to you is, you asked me what I've been doing. When I left the show in 91, after you left before me in February 91, and then Wayne Morris came on, gave me five more shows. I did that. That ended in August 91.
Yeah, and where's the
I then went to Los Angeles and then ended up in New York City. And I laid low throughout 93 because Nelson Thal had put out that album, which I had nothing to do with, and Dave Neufeld had done the Genius Music, and that was circulating all over the place, confusing people, so I just did interviews about my own stuff whenever it was evoked by the album. But I wanted to say, tell you what happened to the Holy Offices from 93, 94 on. In 94, I worked out of New York City and got LaRouche out of jail. He'd been in jail for 5 years, 89 to 94. I got Zappa a deal with Ryko Disc, a big deal. Gail, his wife, made a lot of money. And there was a big reappearance of Zappa in the media as all these 60 or more albums, CD form, were released. So did that with Zappa in 94. That was after he died. And the other guy, the guy that we ended our last show together, no, it wasn't you, it was with Wayne, but you knew Garrett Dean.
Of course.
You know, my friend Garrett Dean. Well, he died in 93, and late 93, and I in 94 went back to Nova Scotia for a while and started the Garrett Dean Poetry Society, and they played a whole documentary CBC did on him every Christmas from 94 on until about 2000. So I put Garrett into the maritime consciousness. And let's see, who else? Now, McLuhan, I got Lewis Lapham, editor of Atlantic Monthly, or Harper's. Can't remember which it is.
Harper's.
Got him to write the preface or new foreword for McLuhan's Understanding Media, and that was reissued in 94 by MIT Press. So that made it solidly respectable in the pink world. And let's see, who else? Dr. Beter. I got Dr. Beter's tapes transcribed, and they were put on the Internet in 94. Let's see. Cosmic Awareness, Dave Worser, my favorite channeler of Cosmic Awareness, he moved from Los Angeles, Venice, Marina Del Rey area up to Seattle, where he began in the 50s. So I got him relocated in Seattle. That's the Cosmic Awareness Holy Office. Finnegan's Wake. What happened with Finnegan's Wake? Oh, yeah, I started the New York Society of Finnegan's Wake. They had sort of made early attempts to get it going, but when I entered in the scene in New York, 93 and 94, the society really got expanded. We got the Holy Office of Herbert W. Armstrong. I disbanded his church. He died in 86. And are you there?
I'm here.
Did you say something?
Hello, hello.
Yeah, I'm here.
Good.
So I did McLuhan, LaRouche, Herbert Armstrong, Zappa. Oh, yeah, I got Mae Brussel, got the archives of Safe House in Virginia McCullough. She saved it. Now they're at Santa Cruz University.
Let's see, Mae Brussel,
Zappa, Cosmic Awareness, Garrett Dean.
And then we're working with
the guys.
That's everything.
Can I ask
so
you a question?
So that's what I did in 94. And then I prepared for the Enver Amin to die in 2000. Now I'm resonating here waiting for cold fusion.
Now, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. What I want to ask you about somebody else, though. And you'll laugh when I ask you about this. What about Ivan Stang?
Ivan Stang, I think he died.
Did he
but
really?
The Android meme is like rhubarb. It's a jam. The Android meme replays all of the media that we do. Mm. And did in our evolution. And so the Android meme ruled from 1960 to 1990. And then they brought in the Internet, which was the after image of the Android meme. And Ivan Stang was not on the Internet. But somebody, maybe the guy here at CKLN, Dave, whatever his name is, he has a show Sunday night, he played a role in getting Stang on the Internet. I know he did later in the 90s, but he might have been the beginning. And so the Android meme replayed the Stang cult on the Internet, and they have a chat line called alt.slack, and that sort of re-energized the memory of the Church of the Subgenius. Mm. And apparently they're going to release a book a couple of months, a third book collected from my files. Remember, Stang always used my files, the 10 Holy Offices, and then put it into an American bias format. Because we're a Canadian operation. I mean,
yeah.
Canada is the sensibility, the Quadrophenic sensibility for the Android meme in countering the Android meme. So Ivan Stang himself does not exist, but the recycling his image as the Android meme does to everybody, including me.
Okay, can we stay on that, though? The Android meme. Let's talk about this new film with Robin Williams. Can we do
yes,
that?
Yes, called Man of the Year.
Yeah, and the character's name is Tom Dobbs.
Yeah, I think that movie is coming out to counter the issue of Stang's third book. Mm. I mean, this is the battle, the old battle we had back in the 80s against the Church subgenies. Us Canadian subgenies, or subdinis as some of us are called, we battled the American subgenies church. Now, that ended in 1990 with the collapse of everything. And then in the Android memes recycling it, as we got more and more into the late 90s and into the, you know, the millennium, 2001, you had The Matrix came out, which was about me. Mm-hmm. You had that movie Enemy of the State, which featured Robert Dean and Lenny Bloom as characters in there, based on a Gene Hackman character model on me, Bob Dobbs. And now you have this movie, Man of the Year, coming out about a radio talk show host, all made possible because of you, Mike, because you were the host, I was the guest.
That's right.
Right?
Yeah.
But the Android meme knew that I was the hidden ground of the show, so they're now putting a movie out about me called Man of the Year, where it's about a radio talk show host who becomes president of the United States after he starts a joke and some critic complains, well, why don't you become president? So he ran for president.
And he wins.
He wins.
Yeah.
And then the movie doesn't end there. It deals with the problems of being in the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we acted out in our show, the problems of being a Tetrad manager under pentatic Android meme conditions.
Yeah.
That's what we're prophetic for this movie. So it'll be very interesting to see how much Robin Williams relies on insights that were created 15 or more years ago.
So we know where the Dobbs comes from. Where does the Tom come from?
Tom comes from Nelson Thal. Nelson Thal was Lenny Bloom on the Mojo radio show when I was on with him in 2002. Now, Nelson Thal represents the Mossad-controlled Bolshevik Canadian Empire. And the thing about Nelson Thal is that he picked the name Lenny Bloom from the movie Enemy of the State in 1999 because it's a journalist that gets killed early in the movie. So Nelson always worried about being killed quickly. So he took on the name Lenny Bloom for the Mojo show. And he's still doing the Mojo derivative on the internet called Cloak and Dagger. But now this movie is taking the two factors, me and Nelson. And Nelson was known when he used to call in on the show, as we heard today in the show played, he was known as Tom Rich.
Mm-hmm.
And so you put together Tom Rich, Bob Dobbs, you get the character of Robin Williams playing Tom Dobbs.
Tom Dobbs.
So the dialect between me and Nelson continues in the Android meme.
Fascinating.
Speaking of Santa Claus,
scary.
Yeah, so what do you plan? So I would say that this indicates the reason you got in touch with me and Greg to do this show is that you think it's safe to come out of the Federal Witness Protection Program. And that's what you were wondering, right?
I'm feeling that now. I am feeling that.
Yeah, well, I don't think we should do it.
Oh.
I say that the cold fusion environment, which will come in China in another 5 or so years, it's not until we have the cold fusion environment are we free to move forward. The Android means playing all kinds of tricks. And I see this as a symptom. They're putting out this movie, Man of the Year. It made you feel confident. They're trying to smoke you out, Mike.
Mm. Mm-hmm. So I shouldn't be tricked.
Yes, do not come out until you have your cold fusion battery.
All right.
When you can buy your cold fusion battery, put it in your home, then it's safe. That's locked down Bob Brule with Connie simulations involved, too. When you do that, then you're ready to move free.
Well,
and we'll meet again in the body. We'll shake hands.
We're quite comfortable here. I mean, we can survive. We grow our own food and raise our own animals, and I think we'll be okay for another decade or so if we have to.
Well, yeah, you're going to get good karma because you are doing a media fast.
Yeah.
As much as possible, you're attempting to show a media fast, even though you'd like to turn the media on occasionally,
mm-hmm.
and you're doing that by coming on the show here. But we don't get out of that ambivalent, contradictory state of oscillating back between the discarnate state and the physical body until we break through into the cold fusion environment, which gets us into a new hardware and overcomes the discarnate state.
Okay.
Now, you know that show did you hear any of the show today?
I couldn't hear it, no.
Okay. Well, it was a June 28, 1990 show, June 26, something like that. Well, that's just a year after the announcement of cold fusion, which happened in March 1989.
Was that the show where I was late?
Beg your pardon?
Was that the show where I was late coming in?
Yes, yes. And Kent was on, but we're trying to find Kent. We know he knew Dan Lander and did work on CKLN after we left on a Sunday show with Dan Lander called The Problem with Language. So if anybody's hearing this, please find Kent Perry. So say something, Mike. Want to take a call?
I can't.
You can't take a call?
Well, you know, can I ask you another question?
Yeah.
One thing I was aware of recently was the massive AIDS conference in Toronto. And, you know, something you always used to talk about was the conspiracy around AIDS, how it crushed the sexual revolution. What any takes on where we are now with AIDS so many years later?
No, that the Android meme successfully got in the way of the Bush White House in the early 90s announcing the treatment for AIDS. And the treatment was based on them knowing that AIDS was a genetically manufactured organism, and they were not going to let that truth come out until they announced its cure. So they attempted to announce that in 91, 92, as I was predicting. But as the Android meme had died, and Bush worked through the Android meme, and he didn't know that the Android meme was a post-information environment, they never got the information out because there was no ground for saying anything. Mm. That's why it's good that you don't listen to anything on the media all these years, because there's there's nothing there. It never could be, especially in the replay of the Android meme. Yeah. So the AIDS problem will never be solved publicly. The truth of it will never come out. So what's the main point that I said back then was that it would become milder, and after this 29-year cycle, it would fade out, be like a 24-hour flu virus.
Gentlemen, well, this is Greg Duffel speaking.
Hi, Greg.
Hi, Mike. Thank you, Mike Dyer, for being on the program. Thank you, Bob Dobbs, for being here again, the 2006 Discarnate State. It's time now to go to Sembradoris. Thanks very much.
Thanks a lot, man.
Okay, bye-bye.
See you, Bob. Bye.